Well, you'd all both be surprised, even though we are in added time, if this finishes two apiece. It's played into Zexley by Bruno Fernandes, and Harry Maguire has missed! And there was the victory on a plate for Manchester United and Harry Maguire, and he's missed it.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFallon.
Hello.
Start of a new year. Yes, 2025. Yeah, the transfer window's open. Yeah, there's a flurry of business already outside. Well, actually, I don't think there is any business yet. But there's lots and lots of rumours, isn't there, Terry? Lots and lots of rumours flying around. And I'm sure any day now, we'll start seeing people being bought and sold, won't we?
Yeah, bound to be. Probably just people recovering from the bout of snow that we're having. That's the bigger flurry, I would say. Yeah, Palace are in for a couple of players, or maybe not. Youngsters that only sort of like talent scout people have heard of. But yeah, apart from that, it seems to be quiet so far. It's just the calm before the storm, Graham.
I'm sure. But yeah, listeners, I know we don't normally talk about transfers on this podcast because transfer chat is incredibly dull. It's popular, but incredibly dull, isn't it, Jan? Do you know what I think? I think that transfer chat is the football media's equivalent of astrology. It's like the stars. People who specialise in transfer chat are basically like the Russell Grants of football content, isn't it, really? It's like, teams in red will be celebrating too. A fullback appears for team in white. Ooh, I wonder who it could be.
You are right. So the BBC have got a gossip. I mean, all football websites have got gossip columns, but the BBC one's quite amusing because it could be Graham Sibley is potentially leaving to join Real Madrid or Dorking Wanderers, or may also be signing a new contract. So you actually learn nothing from the little snippet they give you, and you've got a little link to whichever rag is running the story, and there's usually nothing in it. Yeah. So it's just speculation, isn't it? A bit like astrology.
Well, both things have what they call the Barnum effect. You know, if you see something that triggers something in you that you think, oh, I'll grab hold of that, then all of a sudden you'll put a lot of store in it. But yeah, it's a load of old bunk, isn't it, really? But who knows? I mean, it is incredibly popular, though, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, but also because I think it's harmless fun, unlike astrology, which is dangerous nonsense. but I don't think there's anything dangerously nonsensical about transfer rumours. I think they take on a certain character. I think that the rumour mill is played, isn't it, by the agents and by players and stuff like that. They plant seeds in. Fabrizio Romano has made his living, makes his living out of deliberately putting out transfer rumours, which by his own admissions, not all of which are entirely accurate. They're just put out there. And so now more than ever, you have to take it all with a pinch of salt. But yeah, I don't think it's doing any genuine harm. And if people are entertained by it, then fair play to them. But yeah, I personally find it dull. Transfer deadline day I find interesting because that's when deals can often get done. And I find transfers interesting. But I find transfer rumours and tittle-tattle dull.
Yes. But of course, that's all we've really got at the moment because there hasn't been anyone actually bought or sold.
Because it's the first Monday of January and no one can be asked to do any work.
Yeah, people have only just switched off. They're out of office, haven't they?
So exactly. Yeah, you know, you're only just getting your out of office set up. You've got a whole stack of emails to go through. You've got messages on your voicemail that have got to be addressed. You haven't got time to start transfer rumours just yet, let alone start transferring players. Blimey.
Exactly. You've got the sandwiches you left in the office fridge before Christmas that have gone mouldy. And you've got to clean that out before everyone gets it. I mean, you're not going to be signing players, are you? That's just going to be ringing.
Is that a common thing, or have you broken into my office and actually? You know,
it's common across all offices, I think.
Well, of course, one rumour that did seem to have a bit of a grounding in reality was the talk of Trent Alexander-Arnold going to Real Madrid. But this is because he actually had a concrete offer that has been made. They approached Liverpool, and do you think they've turned his head? I mean, we did talk about this under door 23, I think, in the advent calendar previous episode. Listeners, if you haven't listened to it, it's an hour and three quarters of us talking about what's coming up this year. But Jan, it does look like, on the basis of one performance against Man United, that Trent maybe has had his head turned by Real Madrid?
Possibly. Interestingly, the Sky guys had a conversation with Martinez, the Manchester United player, after the game, and they said, what's the difference between how you guys have been playing and how you played today? Because obviously it was night and day compared to previous performances. And he said, it's in the mind. That's the difference. It's in the mind. And I think you can flip that and apply that to what happened to Trent, or potentially not, because we don't know what goes on in the guy's head. But certainly his performance on Sunday was terrible. I mean, for the Martinez goal, Manchester United just walked past him and he was jogging to try and catch up. So we'd be speculating almost like a transfer rumour as to what we know, what's going on in Trent's mind. But you could speculate. It's my job to speculate. So yes, I would speculate that Madrid have turned his head based on one game of football.
Terry, what are the runes telling you right now?
I think that Trent has not had his head turned. I think Trent knew this was coming. Or if he didn't know it was coming, then some of his people would know that it was coming. I think Trent's just had an off day. He's had a bad day. He's just not turned up. It does happen with Trent. It happens with lots and lots of top class players. But they're not all like super, super consistent. I just think it's a coincidence. I think it's also the fact that Manchester United had a much, much stronger midfield. I think that Man United played a lot better. I think that they were just caught unawares. I feel that there was always that possibility that Trent would be going anyway to Real Madrid. And I think that Real Madrid offer is really just to demonstrate to Trent himself and say, look, we want you to sign for us in the summer. And we're that serious about it that we're going to make the offer now. You can come now. We can do that deal now. But it's really just to say to Liverpool and to Trent and to anybody else, we intend to make Trent Alexander-Arnold a Real Madrid player in the summer. And I think that's what that's about.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, we were talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold going to Real Madrid in the middle of December. And we were actually talking about it on episodes beforehand as well.
Yeah.
So we've seen this
coming. We were talking about it in a way of saying, wouldn't it be nice if he did, kind of thing. Without necessarily having any insight. But it makes complete sense that he would do that. It would be brilliant.
Yeah, but if we're having that with absolutely zero inside knowledge, then it's not going to be any news to Trent himself, is it? So, yeah, I don't think it's just this one thing. The fact that it was all out in the press last week. Maybe there is some things that the reaction of fans has filtered through and then he's suddenly feeling, what's going on here? I'm entitled to talk to other clubs while I'm waiting for a new contract, a decent contract that I want to sign and find out what I'm actually worth to this club. So, yeah, I mean, maybe there is that case. But, yeah, it was a strange performance, though, wasn't it? Yeah, and it was, well, two strange performances, wasn't it, really? It was a strangely bad performance from Liverpool and a strangely good performance from Man United, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I think being a local lad and it being a concrete offer from Real Madrid, I think that it's become real. For him. So that may have had an effect. But maybe Manchester United have done their homework, and because both of their goals came from his flank of the pitch. And so maybe there was a thought that if this guy's head's been turned, well, let's test it. Let's see if he has and put some pressure on him. That, again, complete speculation. It may well just be an off game. But it's worth pushing that button if you think that you might get a reaction from it. But I don't think that Liverpool missing out on 3 points is just down to him. You know, they're a strong enough team to be able to come back from that. You know, they did. They went up to take the lead, and Amad Diallo is an absolute gem of a player. He was made in Sunderland, of course. But considering his age, he comes up at the right moments. He did it in this game. He did it against City. He is a real quality player. So it's good to see him on the pitch and making a difference, really. United are have been in a period of transition for a very long time. They're in one of their minor periods of transition, and Amorim, I think, will eventually get it right with them. And if he's got a player like Amad Diallo who he can build the team around, and I really think he's that good that you can, then I think they'll be all right.
Colby Maynou as well was back in the side. And he had that extra bit of time, I think, didn't he? No midweek matches. I know it was Christmas and all that, but I mean, like they were working all the way through that time, and they had some time to maybe hash things about. And yeah, it was a terrific performance by Man United. You've got to be honest. I thought that they were going to get absolutely, I'm sure like everybody else, I thought that they were going to get absolutely trammelled. And they didn't. And it wasn't necessarily because Liverpool were poor, although they certainly could have played better, but because they were really, really good. So they earned it. It sticks in the craw, but it has to be said. They were really good and deserved that point.
Yeah, and it made for an absolutely brilliant encounter. That was a classic game of football between two proper old sides. It was brilliant. Really enjoyed it.
And if Xerxes had actually maybe had a go in that final second rather than laying it off for Harry Maguire?
No, if Harry Maguire had just connected to it, if he'd actually got his boot on it rather than his shin, and maybe. But I said on Blue Sky, I don't think the world is ready for that kind of thing happening. Who knows what would have happened? A portal to some hell dimension might have been opened up if that had come sweetly off his foot and just like gone top bins. Yeah.
There's a parallel dimension when that goal goes in, and yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's, who knows, demons, Graham. Props also to the Man United away fans for getting behind Xerxes as well, who I think was treated shamefully. I thought that a smallish section of the home fans during the Newcastle game, I thought behaved shamefully towards Xerxes when they were cheered when he was hooked. That's a shit way to treat one of your young players, frankly. And the Man United players responded in kind, I think much better, and got behind him. And that was good to see.
Yes, it was good to see. But then again, that underlines the fact that away fans are fundamentally better than home fans. Home fans are moany. They sit around, all they do is whinge all the time. They spend the whole match 90 minutes. You go to any ground in the country and the home fans just sit there moaning all the way along. The away fans, they're having a whale of a time. They go across the country. They are invested in it. And no matter how crap their team is, they're there. They're always there, week in, week out. Home fans, no. All they do is moan. So good on you, Man United, away fans. Home fans, do one, okay?
And on that, home fans are always the first to leave, aren't they?
Oh, of course they are.
But away fans always stay till the end.
Yeah.
Probably because they have to.
Yeah.
At least they're there with massive dogs scaring them in.
I was going to say the same thing, but yes.
Yeah.
But even if they weren't, they would.
Yeah, they'd stay anyway, wouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean, home fans do have perhaps a bit too much knowledge of the train timetables.
There's that.
There is such a thing as too much knowledge, isn't there?
A few years ago, when Frankfurt played Chelsea, a Bundesliga Twitterer of high standing, it should be said, crucifying the Chelsea fans for leaving, you know, basically at the end of the game that Chelsea had just won. It was the Europa League quarterfinal, and he was saying, and all the Eintracht fans there were still there. It was at Stamford Bridge, right? Okay, so, and it's like Thursday night. And they're saying, the Chelsea fans just go to show, this competition doesn't mean anything to them. You know, look at those Frankfurt fans, they're staying behind even if they've lost. They've gone, mate, those Frankfurt fans don't have to go to work tomorrow, and they don't have to go back to wherever it is that they live in the next 2 or 3 hours. It's like it's 10 o'clock on a Thursday. No one in that stadium lives in the area because, like, no one lives in Chelsea. Only, like, odd mega human super rich billionaire people live in Chelsea. Everyone, all Chelsea fans live outside. It's going to take them forever to get home. That's why they leave. I thought, blimey. But you're right about home fans. I mean, I was a home fan on Saturday. I'm rarely a home fan these days. And I think you're partially right. I think the people that I was sat with were all amazing people and brilliant and super, super supportive. But there were sort of like, you know, a lot of people moaning away. And I suppose if you support Crystal Palace, it's probably understandable.
Well, Mrs. Sibley was at Falmer. She got a ticket from someone who has a season ticket there, and she was sat in amongst the Brighton fans. You know, she did have her Arsenal sweatshirt on underneath her big coat because it was very, very, very cold. And she said all the Brighton fans around her just moaned and whinged all the way through it. All the way through. Even like before they went a goal down. It was whinge, whinge, moany, moan. But of course, they're all a bit Sussex there, aren't they? So, you know.
Well, there is that. But yeah. Also, sorry, Jan, I know you want to come in. But this needs to be said. The thing about Brighton, that does surprise me a little bit. Because I was under the impression that a significant number of Brighton season ticket holders are actually Arsenal fans who just couldn't get into the area and they've moved down. North London types that have moved down to Brighton and picked up season tickets at Falmer. But yeah, well, I'm not remotely surprised to hear that, to be perfectly honest with you.
I was also a home fan just before Christmas. I think, Terry, probably in the seat in front of where you were sitting in your recent game, watching Palace be destroyed by Arsenal. When the whistle blew, me and my son were sitting in that stand on our own. There was no one around us.
So many times you can watch your team getting pummeled by Arsenal that it does become a little bit tired after a while.
Yeah, must admit, if I was going to a home match, well, let's say if I was at Whyteleafe and there was 6-0 down with 10 minutes to go, would I want to go? Should we just go to the pub, boys?
Well, maybe there was a fire drill and you just didn't hear it, Jan. I don't know.
It is possible. I'm hard of hearing these days.
Talking of Chelsea, as we were about 5 minutes ago, I think we've put the kiss of death on them. They were another door on the advent calendar and it's all gone a bit pear-shaped. We actually said, well, I said, I opened up the door and I said, Chelsea, possible title contenders, and ever since then they've not won a game. So yeah, sorry Chelsea fans, but that's how it goes sometimes, isn't it? Will's fallen off their season. Enzo Maresca, a massive fraud now, is he, Terry?
Or Enzo Mascara, as one of the Palace fans kept calling him when he was standing outside of his little touchline area. This guy getting up and berating him for Mascara, get back in your box. I thought, interestingly, I've had time to reflect on this now. I saw Chelsea obviously very up close. They could have put three or maybe even four past Crystal Palace if they'd been able to hit the target. So maybe they're just having they're a bit shot shy at the moment. It would suggest that they're capable of creating goal scoring chances. But they did give up six shots on target to Crystal Palace, and their keeper, Sanchez, he made a couple of very, very good saves. I mean, properly good saves in that game. So Cole Palmer, interesting player, scored a really, really good goal. Fantastic dummy assist from Sancho for Cole Palmer. But then they both went a bit quiet after that, which I thought was quite curious. I don't know how much of that is down to the fact that Doucouré is back in the side and maybe was able to look after Palmer a little bit more. I don't know. I'm just difficult when you're watching your own team. But yeah, just as an aside, I was sitting there and there's like about, because as we know, Jan, as you know, Greg, because you sat in that block, a little block of seats, because you've been a guest of various people that we know who have that little there. And the players are very, very close to you. And I was looking and there was Sancho and I was thinking, I never made it to Dortmund while he was there. This is the first time I've seen Jadon Sancho in the flesh, and he's playing against my old club for Chelsea, which kind of took the sheen off things a little bit. As it happens, I thought he was a bit of a peripheral figure in this game. But yeah, I don't know whether that's endemic of anything, but yeah, it might just be that Chelsea maybe are regressing to the mean. Maybe they're just not that together. They've had a good run. It does happen.
Yeah, if they're not scoring goals, then maybe it's just Nicholas Jackson reverting to mean there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, which is a very, very lovely meme from last year, which I think we'd all welcome coming back again. Yeah, definitely.
He does blow hot and cold, though, doesn't he, to be fair? But then again, I mean, it's not just one player that makes a team. And if you're going to go to Ipswich and get humped, then look at yourselves.
Well, maybe Chelsea can build up again from the back. Maybe they could call in a couple of their successful loans that have gone out there. Maybe Trevor Chalobah can come back from Palace to shore up their defence. And then from there, they can be more confident in attack. What do you think on that, Terry?
That teeth grinding you're hearing now, listeners, that's not coming through the MP3. That's not coming. That's actually my teeth grinding right now as you're listening to it. Yeah, there's a talk of Trevor Chalobah coming back to Chelsea, being recalled, because they have apparently they have a shortage of players at Chelsea. So I've got some injuries. I mean, that's annoying for two reasons. One, for entirely selfish reasons, because Palace are really good with Chalobah, and that trio of Lacroix, Gueye, and Chalobah is really coming together nicely, and it could really derail our season if we have to resort to Chris Richards, who I think is a lovely man, but I mean, I don't think he's as good as Chalobah as a player. And it's also annoying because, like, they froze that guy out. I mean, he did not train in pre-season. You know, he was not required, was not wanted. It did take a long time for him to settle into the Palace team. And the reason for that is because he had no pre-season. And he's just as they've got it going again, they're thinking about just like having him back, which feels shitty, frankly, if I'm being completely honest with you. I think that's a shitty way to deal with people. And I think that people might want to think twice about doing loan deals with Chelsea if that's how it's going to be. And they're well entitled to recall their player. He is their player. I acknowledge that. But nevertheless, I still feel it's a bit of a shitty thing to do if it happens. If it doesn't happen, then, you know, I'll take the whole thing back. Chelsea are great.
What's it doing to the player as well, though? You think about that. You know, I'm doing really well at Palace. You didn't take me on pre-season. So you're bringing me back now because you're desperate. And the truth is that even if he does go back, he'll probably sit on the bench or just be in the, well, yeah, be in the squad and probably won't have much to do when he could be at Palace actually improving himself and helping his potential next club. But, you know, that's Chelsea for you, isn't it?
That's Chelsea for you. It's a deliberate attempt to nix Crystal Palace's run to the Conference League. That's what it is. They see Palace as a rival. Clearly, that's what it is.
I think you're right. I think you've stumbled on the truth there.
The truth there, yeah.
I mean, they're Chelsea are fourth in the table, looking over their shoulder at Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
A mere 11 places behind them.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see why they're starting to get a bit of a sweat on, can't you?
I'd be worried if I was them. Everyone should be worried.
This is what happens as soon as Palace start getting somewhere that can be referred to as mid-table, isn't it?
It's also what happens when I go to a Palace game, is that I suddenly remember that I'm a Palace fan and get very partisan.
It shows. Now, guys, I think we should perhaps record two versions of the next segment, because I don't know if this is going to happen or not. So apparently about an hour before we started recording, it was announced that Julen Lopetegui was going to be sacked, or was in the process of being sacked, or has been sacked. A lot of stories with the end of Julen Lopetegui not being West Ham manager anymore. And the speculators out there had looked through the tea leaves and seen that Graham Potter was going to be the guy who is going to replace him. Yes, he's now the first name on any list of any club that gets rid of their manager. Yeah, not really surprising, because we kind of bigged up West Ham a bit at the beginning of the season. Well, I did anyway. I thought that they'd done some really good transfer business, and Julen Lopetegui was an interesting choice, I thought, for them. And it just hasn't worked out for them, has it?
Not really, no. West Ham's a difficult place for anyone to go and get any kind of success anywhere. You know, West Ham fans are very passionate and they want to see their team do well, as do all fans. So I don't think the issue is the fans, although it is hilarious watching them melt down. But clearly, it's a strange place to be employed, you might say. But Lopetegui, he's got a track record. He seems to be one of these managers that does seem to fall out with clubs. He didn't leave Wolves on the best of terms, did he?
Mm.
And of course, he was centre of the massive controversy a few years ago with Real Madrid, wasn't he? So he seems to have form with upsetting people. But they're not on a very good run. I don't see why anybody would think that he would make them world beaters. But potentially he's on his way out now. And I quite like Graham Potter. I know I'm a bit of a lone voice on this podcast on that one, but I think he's all right. And I would hate to see him go to West Ham, because I think it'll be a waste of really good talent. I think he'd just go the way, I mean, he'd probably do as well at best as maybe Moyes did, you know, winning the shittiest of the European trophies. But I don't think it'd be nice to see him go there. I'd like to see Michael Beale go there. That's what I would like to see happen.
That's how much you hate West Ham, isn't it? No, that's not how much you hate West Ham. That's how much you hate your neighbour who supports West Ham, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of factors in that little wish there. Moyes went there, I was quite happy that Moyes went there. Even when he won the shittiest of the European trophies, I was still like, well, that's a Moyes thing, isn't it? So now I think it's time for Michael Beale to step up and go to West Ham.
Funnily enough, Terry, Moyes was in the crowd at City when West Ham were being beaten resoundingly by them. Do you think that the spectre of Moyes was hanging over Lopetegui then, and there's been a massive fallout since then? He saw him in the crowd, thought, oh man, that's all I need.
Oh, the old Spanish Latin temperament, like getting too carried away, like reading the runes wrong. Yeah, possibly. He's like, my God, could he be back for a third time, or is it a fourth time? Does anybody really know? Does anybody really care? I suspect that David Moyes probably just lives in the area, doesn't he, really? So, and he's got a lot of spare time on his hands.
Yes.
So, and he's like, oh, I get a free ticket for Man City. Yeah, all right, I'll go. That'll be great. Cheers. Yeah. So I think that's probably what it was. But Brian Potter to West Ham, I think he's a good fit. I'd like to see it.
Yes, I'm sure you would.
For similar reasons to Jan. Different, but similar.
Yeah, knowing West Ham fans as I think I do, I think that's a sort of manager that would suit them quite well. You know, they don't want success really, do they?
No, they want a coach that people recognise to be, in principle, a very, very good coach, even though he doesn't actually win as many football matches as people think he does. And I think that's Brian Potter to a key.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, there you go. Graham Potter, or Brian Potter, if you prefer, will be the next West Ham manager. That's assuming that Lopetegui is sacked. Let's say that he is, because everything seems to point to the fact that he's losing his job right now. I think they're just doing it very, 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 very slowly or inefficiently.
Interestingly, on the subject of fired managers under pressure, I was listening to the radio and apparently Sean Dyche's position is being reviewed as well. So obviously with the new owners taking grip there, I wonder whether or not they might feel, well, do we want to sign Dyche players in the January window, or do we want to sign somebody else's players? So, yeah, and obviously with Everton not really getting the kind of results that they need, you'd have to wonder whether or not there's some changes there. Who knows? Maybe Brian Potter should hold out for the Everton job.
Well, the Friedkin Group have been firing managers like nobody's business in Roma for the last year. Marino, Daniele De Rossi and Ivan Juric. Ivan Juric is terrible, so it's no wonder that they sacked him. But they should never have appointed him in the first.
Counts as a sacking. The only sacking that should have happened there was the person that hired him to begin with.
True. And now they've got Claudio Ranieri there. So actually, if they do fire Dyche there, I think Moyes is more likely to go there, I think, rather than...
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Genuinely, I think they'd bring him back. He's a very popular manager at Everton, so why wouldn't they bring him back? Apart from the fact that he's done nothing apart from European success.
There are certain realities that, you know, it's important that we stay locked into, irrespective of whether they are true or not. And Jan, I respect the reality that you've chosen with regards to Moyes, because it's grounded in a deep-seated hatred of him and what he did to your club. And I respect that. However, outside of that reality, I'd say Moyes, if he wants to work, is still a manager who could get a job. And yeah, this might be a good time for him to go to Everton. As much as I respect John Dyche and I would like to see him succeed at Everton, if they were to make a change, that would be a good fit. It does kind of work quite nicely with the whole Roma thing as well, bringing in Ranieri, who in his own way is also a club legend. I mean, he's a Roma lad, so it's even more so. But I mean, he's a club legend, and it might be an interesting fit to come in there. And he's pragmatic, and he won't complain if people sign players that he doesn't like.
Problem is, though, he's held in such high regard at Everton that going back, I mean, you've got to at least achieve what you've achieved before. Otherwise, it's seen as a bit of a failure. But like Keegan going back to Newcastle, you know, it's true. Just, you can take the sheen off your reputation. So going back, I think, is always a mistake.
Counterpoint, if they succeed, that will be in surviving. If they stay in this division, that will be seen, I think, as being a notable and successful period. He came to rescue us. The Messiah returned to rescue us from the Championship. And even better still, if he was to start the next season in a new stadium, which I think in many ways, there's some poetry to that. But yeah, as things stand at the moment, what we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes may never happen.
Well, of course, of course. Everton have got Peterborough at home in the FA Cup. And this is on Thursday night. The third round of the FA Cup starts on the Thursday night. They can't get away with not scoring against Peterborough, can they?
No, they've got to win that game.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, they've got to get through that round and score a good couple of goals.
Yeah, and there's no excuse of putting out a weakened team because you've got to concentrate on keeping the team up. No, you've got to win that game, haven't you? Everton fans should be given something from this season, shouldn't they, Terry?
Even Everton's second team should feel as if they would be able to beat Peter Brown. But it is a very, very tricky one because you upset the balance of your first team by rotating players. And if you're not in a good place, Peter have got nothing to lose. I assume, speaking about returning managers, that Darren Ferguson is still the Peterborough manager. See, there we talk about managers who have keep coming back. Well, I mean, oh no, this is about his sixth time as Peterborough manager. And they still love him. That is a really, really difficult tie for Everton and could be a massive banana skin, for them. And you would think that if that ends badly, then that is the end for the coach.
Well, talking about managers who go back to clubs, Mark Robbins, before he goes back to Coventry, has picked up the role at Stoke now, hasn't he? So they'll be facing your boys at the weekend, Jan.
Yes, again, they beat us over the festive period in a narrow game. So Stoke's always a difficult team. Well, it seems to be a difficult team for Sunderland to play, although most teams across history have been difficult team for Sunderland to play. So, good luck to him. It was a bit strange him going from Coventry, as I think we covered at the time. And I'm sure they feel that they're going to rip up trees now. They've got Frank Lampard there rather than Mark Robbins, who did so well there. So, he'll do well at Stoke because he's a great manager.
Stoke's a tricky one, though, isn't it, Graham? Because like they've still, I mean, maybe not so much now, but they for years after the relegation, they were like managing the contracts of players who are on Premier League money, and it was really causing them problems. So they've had a succession of actually quite highly regarded coaches go there and fail. If Stoke are at that point now where they're able to sort of like maybe genuinely strengthen and build a decent Championship team, then that actually could be a really good move for Mark Robbins.
How are you feeling about Palace's FA Cup tie against Stockport on Saturday?
Well, Stockport are a very good side, aren't they?
Yeah.
I mean, I know they play in a different division, but they are a very good side. And I always worry about that. Yeah, I mean, I always worry. I mean, what I do think is that if the League Cup is anything to go by, that Oliver Glasner will not rotate. Or he might rotate a couple, but he will not rotate, I don't think. I think they will say we have to win every competition that we play in. We look to win every game that we play. And he'll field a strong side. Yeah, I feel a little bit anxious about it, as anybody should. We should all feel anxious. Who have Arsenal got?
Well, funny you should mention that, but we've got Man United at home.
Okay, well, you should certainly be feeling anxious, but a different kind of anxiety.
Well,
losing to another Premier League side is one thing, in the Cup is one thing. Losing to a League One side, not cool.
Yeah. We have got Tamworth Tottenham in the box set. We've also got Liverpool versus Accrington Stanley, Arsenal, Man United, and Man City versus Salford City as well. They're all going to have previews this week in the weekend box set. And if you want to start off your new year thinking, well, actually, I want to read more newsletters, that's what I want to do, then what you should really do is sign up to ours. I'll sign up to ours because it's only one a week. You know, we're not going to be like spamming you every day. Our Substack is free and it is every week, and we will tell you the games that we think you should be watching from Friday to Sunday. It's called The Weekend Box Set, and all you got to do is go to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for The Weekend Box Set, and follow the instructions there. And it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime, if you like your lunch late, usually. but certainly in plenty of time for the first kickoff, which is usually on Friday evening, which this time is Dortmund versus Leverkusen. Should be the good match, that one.
Absolutely, yeah. Or any game at the Westfalen against Leverkusen is always going to be a belter. And two teams with great players, one team with slightly more together than the other. So it's got potential for lots and lots of goals because Leverkusen are really, really good and focused and coordinated, and Dortmund are a bit shambolic.
And Terry, of course, you do have the option of swapping that game out and putting Aston Villa West Ham on there instead. But I think you'll probably stick with the Dortmund Leverkusen one, won't you?
Tempting, but probably will stick with the original choice then. But thank you for the opportunity.
Well, next week is our 600th episode.
What?
Yeah.
No, are you sure? Is it episode 600 or our 600 episode?
It's episode 600, okay? It's the big number there, okay? Let's not get into that conversation again, okay? Let's not confuse new listeners.
Well, I live for that conversation. Every time we come up to a landmark episode, we have to have this conversation. Well, it's the law.
Yes. Well, it is episode 600 next time. So maybe we'll have something special. No, maybe not. Maybe we'll just have a load more transfer chat. Maybe we'll just have a load of like pointless transfer speculation. But for this week, that's all we have time for. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeFellin, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now! Mm-hmm.